And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Now, don't forget that also we are now uploading the MP3s of the show, so if you are old like me, you don't know what that means. We're uploading the recording of the show the day after it airs on our own website, so that if you missed the beginning of the show, or you want to listen to it again another time, or you want to share it with some friends, you can go online to www.nagb.org.bs. The worst email address ever, or the internet address. Anyway, I'm not happy with the .bs, but and you go to the education menu and you scroll down, and there's a topic that says Blank Canvas, and you click on that, and you can see all the like former shows with pictures of who was on with a summary. And if you click on that link, you can listen to the show again, because people have said, "Oh, I missed the beginning of the show." Go back to the website the next day, it should be uploaded. And if it's not uploaded the next day, it will be uploaded in a day or two, because we're very busy sometimes. Apologies. So tonight
but
we're
very
here.
Efficient.
Yeah, exactly. We try to be as efficient as we can. Right now we have the summer camp on, so 50 children a day. Let me tell you, you're going to get behind on your paperwork when that's going on. We're having a lot of fun, but boy, are we exhausted by 3:15. So I'm here in the studio tonight with Duke Wells and Annalisa Wells, who are the founders of the Bahamian Project, which is this sort of overarching national project to really capture people that embody the Bahamian spirit on a film. Or maybe these days it's not even on film, it's, you know, with pixels. Yeah. But to create an archive of people who... I don't want to say we're important. Yeah, we were important to the country, but not because they held any particular position, but just because of that, their passion and their commitment or their attitude. I mean, in some cases, it's just
That's right.
A person's mm-hmm. attitude.
Exactly.
Because they are a person who is serving the country and who's selfless or who has a passion or who has an energy or something like that. So anyone who's kind of got a story. Now, you can go online and you can actually suggest people that could be photographed to be part of the Bahamian Project. What is the Bahamian Project? Here, right here, www.bahamianproject.com. So if you go there, you can learn more about the project, and you can also put up people's names to possibly be part of the project. So I think that's a part that I really like, because, of course, people are always like, oh, how come he got his picture or whatever? So I think it's sort of nice that the public can just go on. And
it's very valuable to us as well, because, of course, we don't know everyone who should be photographed. Mm-hmm. And
we've received some wonderful people through the website. And I just wanted to say that when we promote the Bahamian Project, we talk about it in terms of art, history, and culture. Well, obviously, it's an art project, because it involves fine quality portraiture of people. But it's also a history project, in as much as we're capturing or documenting this time in the history of the Bahamas, which, as Gildan mentioned before, and as you mentioned, Amanda, is an important part of the entire project. But then it's also culture, and that's an oft misunderstood term. People talk about culture in the Bahamas. We're talking about junk canoe. We're talking about the art. Bahamian art, maybe Bahamian food, Bahamian music, and those things are all culture, but they're not. They're reflections of culture, actually. Culture is really the heart and soul of a society. Culture is the genius of society, the people who express that culture.
Well, and I guess the way you do things, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
the manner in which you do things
exactly.
is part of the culture.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
like the way we hail everybody here. I mean, that is, again, it's something very particular to the Bahamian culture, which isn't an object that was made.
Right.
But you feel it as soon as you come back, as soon as you get off the plane and you've been in, you know, New York or something, you feel the culture, definitely.
Mm, indeed.
Yeah.
But it's often, you know, people look at the reflections of culture, but the essence of the culture is the people themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to capture in the Bahamian Project, is the heart and soul of the people who make Bahamians Bahamian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which I think is just, it's really a beautiful, beautiful thing. And will this just carry on? I mean, what are the... Is it just an ongoing, indefinite...
Well, it is,
it's a work. It's a work, it's a work in progress. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, hopefully it will continue to be a work in progress mm-hmm. 20, 30, 40 years down the road so that, you know, we continue to grow the portfolio of images.
So what is who is the youngest person? Because, again, we were talking when you were speaking to your father and, mm-hmm. and his history. Again, sometimes you just you don't know. Like, wouldn't it be nice to have a picture of XYZ when they were a little boy or they were at school doing their first? And obviously that becomes an impossible task. You can't, mm-hmm. like, go to every high school and photograph.
Right.
But, you know, who's the... who's the youngest person, and how do you identify, I don't know, like, could you broaden it out so that maybe you're following people during their careers? I mean, that would be impossible, again, fairly impossible. But
well, no, but there are, you know, I'm not sure who exactly is the youngest porn that we've shot. There are some who are in the younger range, but some of the ones who we have shot who are younger, we do intend reshoot them. Yeah, exactly. We will want to reshoot them in a few years, you know, as their lives go on, and they will obviously change in appearance, and whatever they've done will change. They may not be the individual that they were, and they may not have anything to, I mean, whatever, however we represented them may be completely different
20 years from now.
Exactly. Yeah. So, we do plan on reshooting certain people, some people.
And so what are the criteria? I mean, how do you decide as a group? Does the whole group decide, all 21 of you? Who's going to, I mean, so I go online and I say, my auntie Tina should be a part of the Bahamian Project because she made me chicken soup every day or whatever. How do you then, because at some point there must be some people that don't get selected, right? Because you're just like, maybe not, or I don't know. So how do you, does the whole group do that? Does just the board do that? What's the process there?
Well, yeah, we kind of present it to the board and discuss it internally. And we look at to see, first of all, we want people of good character. Second of all, we want people who really kind of portray the essence of what it means to be Bahamian. And then in my case, I'm usually looking at the age of the people because, as I said, I like to photograph the older people before they can't be photographed. But I
well, I remember actually after the first show, I think we lost two or three in short order.
Yes. So far,
remember.
I think we've lost
we've
like 11.
11.
Yeah, but I mean, I remember right after the show. Literally, yes. Like, you know, within 6 months of
yes,
the show. So.
Yeah. Any time that I read in the newspaper that someone significant in Bahamian society passes away, I'm always feeling terrible that we didn't capture them because, you know, I wish we had more resources and more photographers so that we could capture all of the people who deserve to be captured before they pass on to
But right now, all of our photographers are working on a volunteer basis. So, you know, we can't ask too much of them. I mean, some of them, like Gildan. Gildan is one of our most...
stars!
He's one of our most passionate supporters. And and he's very on the ball. When we hand him an assignment, he gets it done like that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the photographers, they have lives. They have jobs.
Sure,
they have families.
Yeah.
You know, they have
well,
to...
Gildan has
lives and families. So I didn't mean to say that.
What I mean, though,
is that...
I understand what you're saying.
To me, it's the importance of the
project.
Sure,
you prioritize it differently.
Right. Yeah.
He makes it a priority, right. Whereas a lot of the other photographers, not that they don't see that it's important, but it's, you know, they're doing this on a volunteer basis.
Yeah.
Well, I have the benefit. I'm self-employed as well, so I have the benefit of... You know, flexibility.
Exactly.
And
you don't have to ask your
employer. Everybody.
No,
has
no.
That
listen, I've had people that haven't been able to come on the show, for example, because they can't get the time off work, which is really a shame. Because, you know, sometimes I try to accommodate by taping later in the evening, but it's difficult because the studio's live. Blah blah blah. But again, it's difficult if you've got a 9-to-5 or a 10 or whatever it is. Not every employer is going to understand, you know, your passion project on the side and give you the time that you need to.
Exactly.
To do
but
that.
You know, as I'm self-employed, so the, you know, my time is relatively flexible. But so I tell Duke, if you want to give me one assignment every week, throw it at me.
So do you feel that, I mean, you said there's not that many photographers, which I feel too, frankly. I mean, I look at, you know, other art scenes and I see a lot of photographers doing also a lot of different kinds of work, you know, doing things that are really like not realism at all. And I feel like here we've got a very small percentage of, compared to the number of painters and sculptors. Mm-hmm. And also that, you know, not that experimental yet either. So, but do you feel that in the last, say, 10 years, it's changing? Do you feel like it's getting worse, like as working photographers? I mean, you're all working photographers. And also, do you think the project itself is helping, like, expand any of those
definitely.
Attitudes?
I think when I first, you know, I was a photographer for 45 years in the United States, and I moved down here. There was virtually no photography market, so we got into doing some other things. And then I ran into John Cox at Pop-Op Studios and discussed with him moving in there and was really the first photographer at Pop-Op. And I had a mission to try and promote photography and align it more with fine art. And we had a couple shows at at Pop-Op. And then I came up with the Bahamian Project idea, and you were kind enough to give us some space at the NAGP in 2013. I think since then, photography has...
It was a great show. I loved it.
It's growing tremendously. Yeah. I mean, there's now a whole community of photographers. Mm-hmm. There were just a few when we first got involved at Pop-Op. There was five or six, photographers working towards fine art photography, yes. And now there's dozens of them. So I do think the project has helped photography, and that's the goal, is to build up photography and to align it closer with fine art, and I think that we're accomplishing that.
But do you feel that you still have to have a quote-unquote day job in photography? For example, like Gildan, you say you're self-employed. Do you get most of your work for a commercial market? Is it mostly for advertising, or do you actually sell your artwork, and that's how you...
Well, I tend to...
Or do you have to juggle both, or...
Well, I mean, as a photographer, I consider myself a professional photographer, mm-hmm. but not a professional, because mm-hmm. I don't make a living from photography.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I like to think the quality of my work is mm-hmm. at a professional standard. Mm-hmm. I am meticulous in how I shoot.
I mean, you've been on this, like you said, forever. You and like people like Rashad Penn are people who pop right into my mind.
Yeah, well, Rashad and I, the way we're taking photography is Rashad and I have developed a photography school.
Mm-hmm.
We had our first adult class earlier this year.
That's fantastic.
We're doing a class with Queens College mm-hmm. students in August.
Great.
It's really, we want to push the art of photography. Mm-hmm. We want people to recognize photography as an art form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we say all the time, a painter paints with brushes and paint. We paint with light.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, I just had a really interesting studio visit with Tyrone Ferguson, and he was speaking to like all the different tools he has. And, you know, and he was like, well, sometimes when I'm using this, I'm like a potter. And mm-hmm. sometimes when I'm using this, I'm like a painter. And so, again, they're just all different. I think people only relate to oil and acrylic because you think of an artist, you think of someone with a paintbrush, right?
Exactly.
But again, but is it harder for young people to get into because of the equipment? I mean, you have to... I mean, again, paints aren't inexpensive, that's for sure. But to buy an actual camera, and even though, again, phones have very high quality, they're not, you can't really take professional level quality pictures with
actually
them.
Actually, you can.
You can?
Oh, yeah.
Can you
don't tell
them?
Rashad
yeah, 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 yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you can.
Listen,
you can.
I don't know. I mean, I'm certainly not about...
Oh, yeah, indeed. I mean, camera, I mean, that is a course in and of itself. You know,
yeah.
But equipment's always been irrelevant in photography. It, mm-hmm. it really boils down to the eye. You can do great pictures with a pinhole camera.
No, that's true.
Camera.
You can do it with a pinhole camera, mm-hmm. exactly. Yeah. So what I was really asking is that the thing that maybe stops people from joining is because they think they have to have a fancy camera. They think they have to have an iPhone 7. They think they have to have something that is... of a level that possibly is a large investment.
I don't know. I think that might have been true at some point, but nowadays I don't necessarily think that is true. I think that mm-hmm. Because the phone, not just iPhones, but phone, even that, I mean, they're so accessible and mm-hmm. affordable. And I think that, I don't think that's such a barrier
so
anymore.
If someone comes to your class, what do they have to have? Do they have to bring anything, or do they just come?
Typically, they bring a camera. It could be a point
mm-hmm.
and shoot.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously would prefer a DSLR,
yes.
but not everybody has a DSLR.
Right. Which is a single lens,
digital,
right?
single lens reflex,
which yeah. means the light goes in and there's a mirror and
interchangeable lenses.
Exactly. And one of, so basically for the listeners, one of those old fashioned looking cameras that's like black with a lens that you can screw on and screw off would be a DSL.
Yes.
We teach the basics of photography. Mm-hmm. Exposure, the exposure triangle.
But so that's really what I'm kind of asking. Like, can you manipulate that on a phone these days?
Yes.
So they have the
yes.
settings
yeah.
that you can manipulate.
Yeah, you can shoot
quote,
it. You can shoot
aperture?
And quote manual
okay.
on a phone.
In fact, a
mm-hmm.
phone camera is often the best camera to start with.
Because you always
any
have
kind
it.
Of a simple
yeah.
camera mm-hmm. because it teaches you to see. And mm-hmm. photography is truly the art of seeing. When I taught college level photography back in the States, on the first day of class, I taught at a fairly good art college, and a lot of well-to-do kids would attend that college. And on the first day, they'd all have their Nikons and Canons and stuff, and we'd ask them to put them away, and we gave them Kodak, those little Kodak disposable cameras. And we would ask them to go do the first assignment with the Kodak disposable cameras. Well, they would like complain and whine about that because here they have $1,000, $2,000 cameras, and they didn't know why we would want them to do it with this simple little disposable one. Unbeknownst to them, I was also the president of the Advertising Photographers of America Detroit chapter, and I went to the New York chapter and gave disposable cameras to some of the top photographers in the United States. And then after the first week, the students would turn in their pictures, and they would, you know, make excuses about how it was the equipment that prevented them from capturing great images. Then I would show them the images that these top professionals photographed with the disposable cameras, and it would blow their mind. It didn't matter about the equipment at all. It really matters about the way that you're seeing the subject.
As we say, it's the Indian, not the arrow.
I think what's it's also I think what digital cameras have done, or digital technology, is that people have gotten a bit lazier about framing because they know they can reframe. You know, you take a picture and you can cut out things, and so you're not really thinking like, oh, if I'm doing a portrait, maybe there shouldn't be someone's hand like on the, you know, like you think, oh, I can just cut that out. So, and I noticed that when my daughter went on a like a school trip, and they weren't allowed to take any of their devices, and everybody got a disposable camera.
It's interesting that you say that, because, well, like Duke, I grew up shooting film. You know, so there was no post-processing. You couldn't take something out. You know, the lab used to develop. So, you know, even now when I shoot digital, my goal is to get it right
of course,
in camera.
Exactly. And that's what I'm speaking to, is that, you know, to teach people to see and to get it right in camera and not rely on all the things you can do afterwards.
A lot of people who started photography with digital, you know, they don't take the detail into consideration,
right?
Because it's, well, I can change that afterwards.
Yeah, I can Photoshop that out. Yeah, or I can whatever exactly. So,
you know, what we teach in the school, what we teach is get it right in camera as best you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think post processing should be used to enhance the image, not save it.
Exactly.
Right. You know what? That's a good place to end. So I want to thank you all for being here. I'm going to do a little housekeeping, but we're going to run through just what we've been listening to. So we've been hearing from Duke Wells tonight, the founder, with his wife Annalisa Wells of the Bahamian Project, also here in the studio, both photographers who were part of the project. And we've had Gildon M. Gilbert Jr. with us, speaking to this ongoing project that has no end in sight, to the Bahamian Project, which is a sort of all-encompassing project to capture the Bahamian spirit through portraits of its people, which started in 2011, the idea. We had the first major show at the National Art Gallery in 2013. You had another one at Pop-Up, and then now tomorrow night is the opening of another series from that project called Bright Lights and Raw Gems. It opens at 6 p.m. at the Central Bank of the Bahamas and closes at 9. It will be on for a month, so you have time to go back and see it. The website is www.bahamianproject.com. If you think there is someone you feel should be photographed as part of this project, you can suggest them to be a subject on that website. And some of the photographers who are going to be exhibiting tomorrow night include Melissa Alcina, Dante Carrere, Vado Culmer, Chris Day, Demetrius Francis, Terrell Glinton, Rosemary Clarice Henna, Paul Harding, Noa Harris-Smith, Ben Jameson, Donald Knowles, Sherrod Lightbourne, Rashad Penn, Alessandro Sarno, Andre Shepherd, Linda Wells, and Sophia Whitehead, as well as Duke, Lisa, and Gildon, who we heard from today. So I really encourage people to go out and support that project. I think it's a really an awesome idea, and I'm really pleased that it's ongoing and, again, bringing photography back into kind of the public forum as a legitimate art form and something that can really help us archiving our culture. Before we leave for the evening, I just want to reiterate that we've got just a couple of days left of the George Cox, John Cox show in the ballroom. It's coming down on Sunday evening, so Sunday would be your last day to be able to go see that. As you know, the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas is free to the public. Anyone who is Bahamian or living here and is a resident can go free to the National Art Gallery on Sunday. We're open from noon to 5, and that will be the last day of the John Cox and George Cox show. Ongoing in the upper galleries is the Thierry Lamar show, which is absolutely beautiful, a watercolor show. So I encourage people to see that. And on the ground floor, we have in the project space a really beautiful young artist, Gabrielle Banks. I mean, her paintings are beautiful. She's beautiful as well, as it goes, but that's not what I was talking about. Her paintings are really extraordinary. Her name is Gabrielle Banks. She's in the project space until the end of the month, and we have the rehang of the permanent collection entitled Revisiting an Eye for the Tropics, which really takes you through the history of Bahamian art history and includes a lot of the favorite artists, because people are always like, oh, you're always dealing with contemporary art. And I'm like, have you been to the ground floor lately? Because on the ground floor, we always have an exhibition drawn on the permanent collection, and that always includes some of our favorite artists like Alton Lowe and Eddie Minnis and all those guys, and Max Taylor, etc., etc. So please do come to the National Art Gallery. Go online, www.nagb.org.bs. Look at our calendar for upcoming talks. We have our ongoing film screening this summer. Every month we have a really great old movie for free. Most of our programming is for free. And as I said, there is a fee to go to the National Art Gallery during the week and on Saturday. But on Sunday, it is free to all Bahamians. So please come and support your artists. We always love meeting our audience. And a shout out to all the listeners who have come up to me and said they listen to the show. So we all appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening to The Blank Canvas. You've been listening to The Visual Culture and Creative Community Show. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery. It's 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We appreciate you listening. Thank you so much, and good night.